head into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
And welcome to another episode of the spoiler room. It's a table for two tonight where I and the lovely Mr. Andrew Shearer is here with me tonight to kick off February's series of podcasts here in the spoiler room. And tonight we're going to be talking about a cowboy film, a Western from 1993, and it is called Posse. And with me, as I mentioned, is Mr. Gonzorific himself, the lovely Andrew Shearer. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Man, I wish I could do a good Tone Loke voice. This guy's got the best voice of, I don't understand why he isn't in every movie, you know?
Right?
But I was going to. Sound like a motherfucking plan to me. It's no good. It's no good. I hope you're not listening.
You can't quite get that raspiness of his voice.
No one.
And it's natural too. You know, it's like some people think, you know, when he was big in that, you know, and in his music, oh, that's, you know, he's playing it up. No, that's just his natural voice.
How do you get that voice? You just get a bottle of whiskey, a pack of cigarettes, roll the windows up and just do it for like a year. I don't know.
I'm not sure either, but his voice is definitely included in tonight's film, Posse, from 1993. And Andrew, did you want to give the summary for Posse?
Well, I could tell you what Posse is about to me. Posse stars Mario Van Peebles as Jesse Lee, whose daddy was murdered by the Klan. So he comes back into town, rolling with a whole bunch of outlaws, and he comes to just shoot up all the dirty white people.
That's pretty good summary. I like that one a lot better.
I mean, it's more complicated than that, but that's what Posse is to me. You know,
sure.
You just had a bad day, and you just be like, man, let's just watch Jesse Lee shoot him up.
And shoot him up he does with his group of mostly black infantrymen. They return from the Spanish-American War with a cache of gold, and they travel to the West as they search for the men who killed his father, Jesse Lee's father. Yes. What'd you think when you first saw this film? A full, pretty much a black actor-led Western.
Well, I'll tell you this. I saw it in my hometown of Doraville, Georgia, in 93, at the Northeast Plaza Cinema 12. The audience was insane for this movie. The crowds there were just really loved movies, and all we got was action, horror, and comedy. That's all we got. I didn't see an art film or a drama until I got my first video store job. So, like, movies like Posse just were. And plus, Mario Van Peebles' previous movie, New Jack City. Whoa! They like heavily advertised Posse as like from the director of New Jack City. Mm-hmm. So everybody was going in like, we're about to see the Western, the cowboy New Jack City. That was what we were expecting. You want to know what I thought about the movie when I left?
Yeah.
I was pumped for it. I had really not seen many Westerns. And I was pretty sure they weren't like this. And so I just was like, damn, that was good. Like, it was complex. Mm-hmm. The way you had like three different bad guys. It was mind blowing. And the music was cool. And the cast was insanity. And even cooler now that I know who a lot of these older people are that were in it. Back then, it was just like, it was common to see like rappers in movies. And you had your like big stars and stuff, you know? So, God, what a crowd-pleasing experience that was. Loved it.
And I have to say that I first saw this, I kid you not, 3 days ago when I watched this, or 2 days ago when I watched this film. I had not actually watched this full movie until that point. But 93, I was 18 wasn't that heavy into Westerns. So it just wasn't, you know, in my wheelhouse at all. But when we were doing the Western month, you had brought this film up. And in all honesty, I had forgotten about the film at first. But when you mentioned it, it struck the memory because I did remember when it did come out. It was a big deal. And it got some talk for a while as well, though it was released on less than 1,000 screens. Go figure.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because like it wasn't a big hit. You know, it wasn't a hit like New Jack City was a hit. Seems like to me, just from the look of it, a more expensive movie than New Jack City. So probably what happened was he had a hit with that. They're like, here's some more money. Do what you want. I'm gonna make a Western. Okay. And nobody just goes to see it. You know, like,
yeah,
I don't know what, because Unforgiven was the year before this.
Yeah. Unforgiven, I believe, was the year before this.
So it's possible that
Tombstone was out the same year.
Okay. It's possible that the audience, Mario Van Peebles' audience, the New Jack City crowd, was also not the Western crowd, but we loved it.
Well, it is a different film. I mean, than New Jack City. This one, I mean, it's got the you know, it the story goes to the darker places and that, but I think this film is just, it's still not as deep as New Jack City or quite as heavy. It has some heavy elements, but I don't think this film goes as heavy as New Jack City.
No, and you know, it's a hero picture, right? And at the time, that wasn't you know, like the black hero wasn't necessarily a thing people were as into as they were in the 70s. And so in that regard, Posse probably would have been better received had it been done 20 years earlier.
I had that same thought. Sorry, didn't mean to jump on. Jump no, over
it was
your words
like a
there,
thought but, that came no, but, back into my head.
But while watching it, I had that same thought. I'm like, wow, man, imagine if this came out in the 70s. Holy crap. You know, it fits right in with those other films that came out that time. You know, the urban action films that you saw.
He wouldn't have had this budget.
No, that's true. You wouldn't have the budget, which was estimated at 10 mil. It did make 18 mil back altogether, 5 mil its opening weekend, according to Box Office Mojo. So as far as that goes, it was number 3 for the weekend. So it did make some money when it came out. But, you know, I watched this film. I was fast. I'm like, man, I'm like, this is a really kinetic film, and they really blow through this through a lot of story in this film. It was like they weren't quite sure if they would ever get a chance to make another one, because I would have loved to, you know, hang around with some of these characters more. But I don't know. I get the feeling a little bit like it feels a little rushed to me, because I wanted to spend some more time with these characters. Is that just me?
No, you're right, man. It is a big story. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff it seems like they may have done in post to kind of like cover up for the fact that, you know, they were trying to keep it under 2 hours, but mm-hmm. they were telling a really kind of sprawling tale, because the whole thing is framed in flat, kind of like, not in flashback, but like it starts with Woody Strode, who, if you watch Westerns, you don't know who Woody Strode is. You get your head up your ass. John Ford's Woody Strode. Woody Strode's John Ford.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you've got that part of it. And then he's like, let me take you back. And so there's this whole thing about history. There's a whole lot of like history going on there, like a history lesson. Like, oh man, this could be something like we show in schools, but everything you got in schools was something like Roots or Eyes on the Prize, where it is episodic and you do get it in big pieces because it's a big story. But you also have a huge cast, and they go to a couple of different places. Like, you could have hung around on the Spanish-American War, like, how long? That could have been the whole movie right there, just the beginning of it. But like you said, they're popping through. And then, there's, like, more than one antagonistic force in this film. I mean, there's the Klan, there's the military, right? The local law enforcement, and there's some dirty trickster named Carver, too. So It is not all over the place, but you got to pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, I mean it you could follow the story. It's well constructed and edited. It's just one of those things where you're just like, oh man, I could sit here forever and watch, you know, Mario Van Peebles' Jesse Lee go head to head with with Billy Zan's Colonel Graham, you know, yeah, his group versus that group, you know, group, the race fights there that you would have, and the conflicts that they have, how these guys are dying for this colonel who could give two shits about them, which just makes you really hate them. You know, I mean, but you could see that whole, that would be a whole movie right there, like a 90 minute solid of them, you know, end up making sacrifices while the other guys sit behind playing poker. You know, or you get into the story in New Orleans, where then they're in New Orleans with their gold, and they're trying to decide what to do. And they run across characters there. That's where we get to meet the, who's it? The Watchman, Father Time, excuse me.
Yeah. That Father Time is, there are two MCs in this movie. I mentioned Tone Loke earlier, but Father Time is played by Big Daddy Kane.
Oh, damn. I love that character.
And he is a great actor. He's been in a few other movies, but I want to say this is probably the best movie he was in.
Oh, it's a great role. I loved him. I loved this character, Father Time. I'm like, heck, I could see a Western with just Father Time and Jesse Lee going across the West, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, because he, played so well by Big Daddy Kane. And then, like you said, then we've got the Freeman Town, which was a dream to be created by Jesse Lee's dad, which is a town full of folks who were on looking for a place for their land, and not getting, you know, any opportunity anywhere else, and giving them an opportunity to get land and start their own homesteads and have a community that can support one another. And like you said, there's another villain. You get like three villains at least in this film. But the one villain played by Blair Underwood, Carver, you're not quite, you know, I didn't expect that while watching this, because I'm like, okay, we've got Billy Zan's colonel on the, you know, chasing Jesse Lee and his posse across the West, trying to get their gold back. They get to Freeman Town, and you've got the rival town that's just down the road, the White Town, with the KKK, like you said, and the KKK sheriff. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, wait, and then this got this dude just stabbing people in the back.
God, he was the dirtiest man, because him and Jesse were friends.
Yeah.
And then Jesse got, you know, he got sentenced to be in the army, so he's gone for a while, comes back, and he's, dude has just turned into like a ridiculous capitalist. But Jesse Lee is like, there's no way they're going to let you have this, man. Yeah. You are not getting this. No, none of you guys are getting what these white people are promising you guys. Don't be stupid. You know, and even the Indians, like, I told you about white people. Nobody listen to me, y'all listen, you know. And then what happens?
Yeah, things go to shit, but
yes, they do.
It moves through everything. I like the Spanish American War part. I really liked, because it, Billy Zan in general, he plays the best villains.
Yes,
he can play the best assholes. I loved him in Tales from the Crypt.
Demon Knight. Yes. Oh, man. Well, you know, interestingly, Billy Zane at a certain point just always was bald headed. But this is 93, and he still had some hair on his head.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, he's playing the a-hole colonel to a T. I mean, you can tell he just goes all in with this southern asshole.
Character. Yeah. Well, you know, most people probably know him as the bad guy in Titanic.
Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, he could play a piece of garbage, and he's a great part. It's like, you think he's dead, and then he comes back and he's on fire still being an asshole. I mean, that is an asshole when you're on fire and you're still an asshole.
Well, they got that whole thing where he loses his eye, you know.
That was great. Jesse shoots him in the eye. It goes right. Oh, man, you know, he was mad. He's like, I want my gold and somebody's eye.
Right. Jesse Lee, played by Mario Van Peebles, is a great badass character, Mr. Cool. He's kind of similar to your man with no name, though he looks better with his shirt off.
Yes.
He's ripped in this.
And lit very well. He just, he's a director. He's going to look the best.
Oh, yeah. The cinematography and camera angles they have, especially for his character, it's just like, oh, he's the main badass.
Yeah.
He gets the best costume. He gets the best everything. But you know, you get that with every hero film, and he's the best shot as well. Mm-hmm. A character that surprised me in here was the inclusion of Stephen Baldwin's character, Jimmy J. Mm-hmm. I liked his character quite a bit because the way they work him into the story, it didn't feel like it was a standout character, you know, like it blatantly put in, you know, it felt natural, at least to me. How'd you feel about Jimmy J included in the posse?
Well, see, when I was a little kid, little J, when I was a kid and saw it, I was like, you know, one of the Baldwins, like Alec Baldwin, Stephen Baldwin, William Baldwin. These guys were in like a lot of movies. So you're like Baldwin, right? Right.
Yeah.
But watching Posse now, I'm like, you know, Billy Zane's an asshole in the movie. Stephen Baldwin, he will never in his life be around this many black people. Stephen Baldwin is a... You remember James Woods? We were talking about being a piece of shit. Stephen Baldwin, also a big piece of shit in real life. Mm-hmm. Big piece of shit. Threatened to move to Canada if Obama became president. That is not what Little J would have done.
No.
Little J has a great speech in the movie, and who knows how hard it was. He probably Stephen Baldwin asked for more money just to say something like this. But he was just like, you know, most people are basically, I'm paraphrasing. He's like, most people are racist because they're afraid of things that they don't understand. He's like, but I'm not afraid of anything. It was a really cool line that he says to time in that one campfire scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking like, God, Stephen Baldwin, I bet that burned for you to say something that progressive. It burned.
He may have, you know, he didn't develop. He took the role because
Became like a born-again Christian at some point after this movie, I think, is what happened. You know, because he stopped getting the roles because he turned into a real big piece of shit in real life and nobody likes you anymore. And so, you know, see you later.
Yeah, I think this was before he developed a different way of thinking.
Yeah, because he was in Biodome around this time.
Right?
Biodome?
Yeah, Pauly Shore.
Yeah, Biodome.
This film was a lot better than Biodome by... a lot.
In short, since this is a spoiler room, I can say Angel, who's Tone Loc's character, is killed earlier in the film than I want him to be killed. And I know because of the whole relationship with Father Time and Little Jay that running their little gambling scheme together that they had to keep Little Jay alive instead. But I was like, oh, man, couldn't they have killed Little Jay early instead? Because Angel is so cool and so funny, and he gets all the best jokes on these guys. So, didn't you love Tone Loc's character? Wasn't he hilarious?
He was. For the time he got on screen, I was surprised, considering especially where he was, you know, in popularity in that when this came out. I would have thought for sure he would have got more screen time. But the time he does have, he does get the best lines.
And it's the comic relief, which, moments. You know, you kill him. You kill the comic relief. You know, that was, but yeah. Oh, God. What was my favorite? He has so many really funny lines that he has. There was one part where Time tells him his breath smells.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, if you tell your wife to douche, I won't have that problem no more.
Right.
I keep making him sound more and more like a monster. I can't do. Sorry, Tone Loc.
You can't capture that cue, but
no, anyway, yes.
That is a great line, though. I dug his character quite a bit. I wanted to see more of his character. But again, this was one of those where I wanted to see more of a lot of the character, but you've got a lot of characters and story that they go through in this movie, so you don't get to spend maybe as much time as you want to, though. I did like seeing Tommy Tiny Lister in the film.
Bobo. Yeah.
Bobo.
Broke a lot of necks.
I like him in anything. I think he's actually a really good actor. You know, he's usually playing supporting roles.
Often a bad guy too, although it was the president in Fifth Element, of course. But you're right. They gave him like romance in this movie. They made him a musician. And, you know, it was actually like, not quite Gentle Giant. Cause like I said, he breaking motherfucker necks, but there are things about his role in this movie that are different from the ones he normally plays. You know, probably he'll, in his obituary, it'll say Debo from the Friday movies. He will not say No Holds Barred.
Oh, No Holds Barred. Yeah. as Zeus, to which he showed up in the ring for a while too. I remember
I didn't know that.
Yeah, when they were promoting the movie, if I remember correctly, he did actually do a match or two. I may be off on that. My wrestling knowledge from them days, I used to watch him quite a bit, but that's what I when I first, you know, recognized him was from that. And then I saw how many other movies he had been in that, and I like him quite a bit as an actor. And in this one, yeah, he gets a bit of a different role. They flesh his character out more. Yeah. You know, and then you've got the other character too, Wheezy.
Wheezy, yeah. Oh god, I don't remember the guy's name. I haven't really seen him in much. I think he's like a filmmaker. Like, I think he made a couple of movies. I think he directed a couple of movies, but nothing in a really long time.
No, he hasn't made anything in a real long time, but he was in this. He also did a film called True Identity.
God, True Identity. He made that?
Yeah, he was the director of True Identity.
Okay, one second. True Identity is a movie about a black guy that, to hide from the mob, becomes a white person.
Yeah.
This is way before, like, you know, white chicks. Oh man, True Identity. I need to watch True Identity. Holy crap, I haven't thought about that movie in a minute.
Lenny Henry was in that one. He plays the guy who, I believe, the guy who poses as a white guy.
I don't even know. Who was he? Lenny Henry. Huh. Yeah. He did some research. Okay.
Yeah, you know, so you get him in there. He's an interesting character too, because he's one that, even though this is during a time when, you know, the slaves were freed, he's still serving, and he's kind of looked down upon by the other posse, because they think that he's just doing it to survive, which he was kind of. I mean, what'd you think of the Wheezy character? I thought that was an interesting character, how he's included in the posse, but yet no one really cares for him.
Well, I mean, you know, that's not the best setup too, because how are they going to trust this guy who's, you know, it's like, you know, there are a lot of people who are like, yes, they were free, but not so much.
Right.
And so they thought, well, somehow they're going to get a better life if they just, you know, if they were still servants, but not really, you know. Mm-hmm. But Wheezy is interesting because he, he helps them out of Cuba for one thing, and his way of getting them out is pretty awesome. You know, they hides them in a ship of, dead bodies, basically. Like, they'll have to, you know, they have to go in a coffin. But he is, you know, because they take out Angel early, Tone Look's character, and they kill the comic relief, Wheezy kind of has to serve as a comic relief because he's such a contrast from the rest of the guys. He's a really fast talker. He does most of the talking in the movie. You got a bunch of outlaws in there, and, you know, as much as little Jay likes to kind of kid around and stuff, Wheezy does most of the time, but he's also kind of the brains, kind of like the voice of reason, you know, because he keeps their heads cool and stuff like that, and has a lot figured out. So they owe a lot more to Wheezy than is kind of obvious. You know, I don't think they would have gotten very far without him.
No, they wouldn't, because he's the one that helped exchange the money. Because he wasn't as standout as the rest of the characters in the posse, so he didn't look like an outlaw. You know, whereas the other characters, the way, you know, they come riding into town on horses, and people are just like, oh, there's a group of outlaws.
Yeah, but he encourages the group to stay together. He's the first one to actually use the word posse, if I remember correctly, because they are wanting to kind of all split up when they get to New Orleans. He's like, no, all for one and one for all.
Yeah.
So they you know, they grow to see him as one of their own pretty quickly, to the point that I think Little Jay dies, like, defending him from the Klan.
Yeah, he does, because the Klan comes into the bar in Freemantown, where they because the sheriff's looking for Jesse, because the sheriff was one of the guys who killed Jesse's dad, or helped contribute to the death of Jesse's dad. And so he's coming in because he's afraid, because Jesse's on this rampage of revenge.
Yep.
And yeah, they're beating the crap out of Wheezy. And so Little Jay brings all the attention to him. He stabs a guy in a leg and starts making a run for it. And so they all go after him and just beat the shit out of him.
Yes, they do. And, you know, in real life, Stephen Baldwin, What would he have done instead? He would have been in the Klan. That's what he would have been.
He would have been the role of the sheriff is what he would have been.
Or he just would have thrown. He'd be like, do what you want with Wheezy, but leave me alone.
Right.
He would have switched.
Mm-hmm.
Switched sides.
So, yeah, that was an interesting angle they took with that, with his character. But yeah, Wheezy is a character that who's fun. I enjoyed his character quite a bit, and he even gets a chance to shine in the big climax of the film where you get the big battle between all the villains.
What an awesome scene, man. Oh, the ending is amazing.
The whole shootout, I loved how this played out. It was like, how are they going to do this with three villains and just Jesse Lee, who, yeah, Mario Van Peebles, you could tell he was the director and he was the hero of the film because every frame and stuff he's in is just badass.
It's badass. Even when he's shooting, he's in like a door frame and he's kind of like got his one shoulder caught. You know, he's winning. He knows this is going to be his Western. I mean, no question about it. But you want that on screen.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? It looks great on screen.
Yeah, yeah. And at the time, you know, like the other movies that were big for that audience at the time, you didn't see a hero like this. So, you know, he was going to go classic with it, go all for it, you know?
Yeah, well, he definitely had the kind of man with no name vibe as far as attitude, you know, the old Clint Eastwood, I'm just going to stand out in the open and start shooting fuckers.
Yes. Oh, God, so good. You know, just, and how about that Gatling gun, man, when they bust that out? Just like in Wild Bunch.
Yeah, they bust the Gatling gun out. It looked almost exactly like it. I mean, obviously same period and all, but yeah, they pull that out in a scene and he goes riding towards it with the dynamite in his teeth.
So cool.
It's so cool.
So cool.
But what I liked about that too, though, is he does it and he accomplishes blowing the shit out of the Gatling gun. But he doesn't get away scot-free either, and I liked that. You know, he didn't get away freely. They did actually end up grabbing him. So, you know, it shows that your hero isn't completely 100% invulnerable, you know, immortal, if you will, or he was going to get away with everything. But, yeah, I love how this whole battle plays out. The way it's filmed and shot and edited, everything about it, it just moves. And, we even get a image of Pam Grier in here, though. I would have liked to see more Pam Grier.
A lot more, always, in every way that implies. Yeah, I mean, Pam Grier, yeah, she's, you know, there's this saloon this guy owns, and, you know, there's a lot of women there, really extremely fine women. And, of course, Pam Grier is there. But Pam Grier is shown shooting some people. She does get that, but it's very quick shots. It's just jam-packed with cool people. I mean, blaxploitation royalty, you got Isaac Hayes is in this, mm-hmm. too. Really cool.
He's one of the townsfolk. He gets a shotgun. He gets to blow away some people. So
he does. And Bob Miner is in this, too. And Bob Miner is a stunt guy on it as well. But God, Bob Miner was in everything. You guys look up his credits. He's in everything. Bunch of Jack Hill stuff. Bob Miner's a man. I think he might still be alive. I don't know. Nipsey Russell's in it. A couple of my favorite dudes, Paul Bartel, my man. Great New World Pictures director, Paul Bartel. I could do his whole podcast about Paul Bartel. I just talked about him because I did Amazon Women on the Moon. Just talked about him. Sure. And then, who were those two reporters they show at the end? They're the Hudlin brothers. Reginald Hudlin directed House Party, and his brother is a producer.
Mm hmm. Oh, that's who those are, two guys were at the end? Yeah, I was wondering who the brothers.
Yes, they were.
Because they looked familiar, but I was like, oh, who are those? I should know those two performers.
It's one of those instances where, you know, Van Peebles is putting just so everything. I mean, this movie was ambitious in pretty much every way. So starting, and his dad,
Papa Joe.
Papa Joe is the great Melvin Van Peebles. We cannot forget about Papa Joe. What did you think about Papa Joe?
I loved Papa Joe. You can tell. No. You get that scene. You get that scene where Jesse Lee's walking up to the old house where the woman that he's always carried a torch for. She's at, and Papa Joe's just sitting there between. He's like, you don't see him right away, and all of a sudden he just comes out with a rifle. And then he and Jesse Lee are having a shoot off of shooting
the target practice and its little Klansmen that Papa Joe has made. And tell him how Papa Joe's shooting strategy is.
Jesse Lee makes a line about how it's a bit hard to hit the targets, and he goes, "Was it that he shoots them in the legs?
No, in the nuts.
Oh, the nuts. That's what it was. Yeah, well, that's why I shoot them in like the nuts."
Melvin Van Peebles. God, Marvin Van Peebles eventually made a movie where he played his own dad. It's about the making of Sweet Sweetback's Badass Song, which is an extremely important film. Basically, started the whole black film explosion in the 70s. There's also a documentary about Melvin called How to Eat Your Watermelon and a Polite Company or a White Company and Get Away with It. I can't remember what it is. It's just, the man is fascinating. Like, most of it's in French. He's just, you don't want to open that up, but still, he's in this movie as the father of his love interest. And I don't know what the woman's name was. There's not a whole lot of, in the way of female roles in this movie. It is a Western. There's a lot of dudes, but I know she was in Low Down Dirty Shame, but I don't know her name. I feel terrible. I don't come to these things prepared. I should have, but I didn't.
There was his girl. What was her name? Her name was Vero.
But I don't know what the actor's name is.
It was what?
I don't know what the actor's name is, but she was in Low Down Dirty Shame with the Keanu Ivory Wayans.
Well, her character name, though, was that Vera?
Vera, yeah.
Yeah, Vesta Williams is the performer, and she was in...
Oh, no, it's not Vera. It's Lana.
No, that's not Vera. No. Because she wasn't in much. But yeah, I recognized her as well because she was in a lot of films, I think, at that time. Was that her character, Lana? Was that that would be Sally Richardson Whitfield.
Okay. Why was I thinking Vera? Is there a Vera even in the movie?
There is a Vera in the movie.
Is she the one in the bar that goes to bed with
the? She's
with
the
Zeus?
Singer, yeah. She's the bluesy jazz singer, which okay, I loved as well. In a saloon, you go in a saloon, and here she's singing like some serious fantastic soul music.
Right, but the movie. I meant to ask you about the music. What do you think about the music? It's because it's not like. I mean, it's got a good score, like a Western type score, but it's also like hip hop, like. Some people are bothered by like out of time scores where it doesn't fit the period or whatever. Mm-hmm. What did you think when that, because it really kind of kicks in once they get to New Orleans.
It's well,
the
yeah.
First when you hear that Sounds of Blackness song.
Yeah. Well, you get to New Orleans and you get that group, the singing out on the street. And I loved it. I thought it fit very well with the film. You know, I like sometimes if done correctly and it's done correctly in this film, I like when they can work, out of time songs into a period piece if it's done correctly, and here they do it correctly all over. I mean, it's just, it's fitting.
Yeah,
you know, and this is produced by Polygram Filmed Entertainment, and Polygram also was big music too producer, right? At Polygram Records, I think.
I think the company, I don't know who released it. It's been too long.
I do apologize, folks.
No, it wasn't like Universal or anything that made this.
No, it was basically, you could consider it an indie film of the time. Polygram Entertainment. They did music too. So I was right. Yeah, Polygram also did music.
But to answer your question, yes, more Pam Grier is always the answer.
To get back to the original, yeah, it always is the answer. And we
she had like one or two lines and did get a few shots off at the bad guys, lived through it. You know,
well, she lived through, her character lived through it. She gets a few shots off. She's protecting the kids too. So, I mean, she gets that. She gets some a few moments in front of the camera, which is always good to see. But like you said, though, this is one of those where it's so packed with talent that unfortunately not all the talent will get a lot of screen time.
I guess listen to us going on tangents about every actor we mentioned.
Right?
It's just too much in it, you know?
All kinds of great, great talent in this film. And everybody, you know, I like it too because it's a solid story put together. There's some original takes on your Western tropes in this as well. And as we mentioned before, they're not afraid to kill off main characters like that.
Nope.
I mean, that final ending, you know, in the town, you think maybe it's going to take that kind of earlier approach where, you know, most of the people we were introduced to, the townsfolk, they get away. But man, you know, a lot of the town gets destroyed.
Yeah, man. Jesse tries, like, finally rallies everybody, you know, because he's like, man, they're white people. This is not going to be your town. Trust me. Do not trust them. So he finally gets them all like riled up to go. And then they roll in with that Gatling gun. Like, oh, whoops. Sorry.
I didn't expect him to have a Gatling gun.
I was not expecting the Gatling gun, but, you know, whatever. But no, it's definitely true. And I wanted Carver to, like, you know, turn against the bad. I didn't want him to be a bad guy. I want him to, like, end up, like, rethinking shit and joining the fight, you know, and becoming a hero. But instead, Carver just, like, I mean, he found out what was up with, Bates, yep. Right? Mm-hmm. He was making a deal. He thought it was going to be 50-50, but no, it ain't. Bates is in the Klan. Why would you trust the Klan? You think you're the one black person the Klan likes? That's so dumb. Oh, but how badass was it when Abobo's in jail? Who else went to jail? Little Jay was dead. No, who was Papa Joe and Papa Angel? Joe. No, Papa Joe and Abobo are in jail.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, Jesse, you know they're not going to get a fair trial. I mean, the Klan's going to come. And so who walks through the door? The Klan. But who was it really when the hoods go up?
Right? They totally pull the Blazing Saddles.
They did. Oh, that was so good. God, I remember the audience went nuts when it was Jesse Lee under there. And Time, right? The two of them put the hoods up. And there they were. And they just shoot the white people.
And they just shoot them up. Well, that's where you had your the mayor in there too, who was
Paul Bartel.
Paul Bartel, yeah.
Man, everybody watch every movie by Paul Bartel that's listening to this.
He was great in there as the sleazy mayor.
He was. Wow, what a cool. I would love to. There's no commentary on this Blu-ray posse. Mm-hmm. Like, I would love to ask Mario Van Peebles a million questions about why did he put this one there? How did he know this person? You know what I mean? Because it's too cool of a cast to have been put together by a studio or producer. You know?
He had the probably the script and the you know, finally and got the backing, and then he just started going to people he wanted to work with, is what I get the feeling with a film like this.
Had to be, and grow up in the industry because of his dad, or at least grow up a figure because his dad, Mario Van Peebles, is in Sweet Sweetback. It was a crazy ass scene if you've seen that movie. Oh man, do you really think about losing your virginity the way he does? Holy crap. Anyway, sorry.
And one of the gentlemen who wrote the script, Cy Richardson, has written a lot of stuff.
Oh, like too. What?
Well, he did, let's see here. He's known for Repo, Colors, Straight
he
to
wrote
Hell
Colors?
Return. Well, he was an actor in a bunch of these in Colors. Let me see what he wrote, though. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. He was just in a lot of stuff. Posse was one of the only scripts he wrote.
Okay.
But he was an actor in a lot of stuff.
Man, Colors is good. When was the last time you watched that?
Oh, man, it's been years since I watched Colors. That one, I remember.
Direct Colors, or was it Sean Penn directed? Who directed Colors? I'm going to have you, like, wearing out IMDb on me. I'm just all, like, curious.
I thought it was
Sean Penn or Dennis Hopper.
Hmm? Dennis Hopper was yeah, he was in Colors. I remember when Color was coming out that was a bit controversial.
But man, how about that song? I am a nightmare walking, psychopath talking. Oh, I love that song.
The song was awesome. It was. Excuse me, got a radio play for a while. And Posse's got some great songs too. Tone Loc, of course, since you do have him in the film, you got to get him to get a song. And so he gets a song in the after credits sequence about Posse. And
he does come back in a way, the voice Tone Loc.
And of course, as you might figure, folks, though, like any Western, while it does, while the heroes win, there are many losses. Overall, I dug this film a lot. You know, I'm kicking myself for not watching it sooner. But it is a But a lot of the 90s films, I think, suffered from that, early 90s films especially, where they were trying to pack a lot of story in a little bit of time.
Yeah, you know. They were finally getting some opportunity and some giving some money and, you know, getting some. So there was like, you know, a lot of like kind of just go for broke attitude. I think you were the first one to say is like, you might not get the chance again. So go for it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of feeling I got, is that they were like, we're getting it. We've got the money for this. Let's try to do as much story as possible. Yep. You know, I've seen other films like that too, where, you know, you're like, wow, this is great. I wish we could get maybe even two movies for it. I mean, you could see where this easily could have became a series, you know, with the Jesse Lee character. Cool. Yeah. And his posse. But, you know, unfortunately, not in the cards for them to do, get a film made like this and wide released. Let's add that too, because there was direct to video stuff in the 90s and that, you know, films out there that were somewhat similar to this, that, but they'd go right direct to video. No studio would really put them out. You know, you had, was it the Tuskegee Airmen from?
Yeah. The Tuskegee Airmen. Yeah. Yeah. And they did a Buffalo Soldiers movie. I think Danny Glover was in that.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, they just, things were, I mean, the Westerns, most white people have heard of. And the most Westerns out there is a white movie, white Western. Yeah, just the way it is with most movies, still.
Well, it's just the time period that it's set in. A lot of people didn't think of it. But like you said, this film opens going, yeah, you know what? History tends to forget. But there were a lot of African-American gunslingers out there and cowboys. But history doesn't talk about that side of it. And that's why it's great that they had a film like this that, tried to bring some focus to that part of history.
You got to, man. How many, like, you know, when you're in school and it's Black History Month, it's like one dumbass motherfucker that goes, well, why isn't there no White History Month? You want to know why isn't there no White History Month? Because if they taught white history to school and told the real white history, and white people would kill themselves. Poor kids would kill them, so you learn about all the shitty shit white people did in history. It's like, be glad they don't have that. Why not teach you the cool stuff? Why not teach you the stuff you don't know about? Not the, oh man, yeah, no, you don't want all white history. You got enough. You guys got the revised version. You know, you guys got the highlights.
Yeah, definitely get the kids hating themselves. That's for sure.
Oh god, you don't want to know, man. Because I mean, like. Like, you know, I mean, what most of the white people in posse, what are they? Right?
There's not many, but when you do get them in here, they're either bad guys. Oh, well, except for little J, you know, or
who's a bad guy in real life. So it almost cancels itself out.
It does almost cancel itself out. But you do get some white hookers in here. So
you do.
So, New Orleans, you know.
That's right. Oh, what'd she say? She says, the only color we care about in here is green.
Green, yeah. That was a great line, too.
Nice, yeah.
She's like, yeah, the only color we care about in here is green. So, and I that's what I thought, too, is there's some films that will just be very not subtle at all with, you know, whatever type of message they come out with, which tends to make people uncomfortable in their films. You know, in films where there's a message, any film that's got a message, sometimes you can see it where they're just hitting you over the head with the hammer. And here they worked in still a lot of the issues of, you know, today and of the time both. But I didn't feel like it was like insert reference here type of thing. It worked within the story. What would you think about that? You know, when they were trying to get a message or a point across, did you feel like they were really slapping you in the face, or do you think that it felt like it was natural as part of the story?
No, it was a fantastic story and very well played, you know, for the most part, quite popcorny, mm-hmm. Very, you know, very, very much in keeping with the, you know, classic Western framework and style. And, you know, a lot of movies around that time, yeah, they did get preachy, and a lot of movies now get really, really messagey and preachy too, you know, I think he had his eye on actual like filmmaking as opposed to like trying to say something like really, really explicitly. Like the story is there from the beginning. You get like, here's some history you weren't taught. Mm-hmm. And so then it goes into it from there. And everybody's like, oh, cool. This is great. I had no idea. And other people are like, that's right. There was cowboys too. Just like, you know, so there was no need for that. You know, mm-hmm. he's telling an adventure story. He's got too much to do.
Yeah.
Posse has too much to do to spend its time like reiterating its messages. I mean, if you see the Klan setting a church on fire and then like, you know, crucifying this poor guy on it, all you got to do is show that. That's all you need to know. You know, and the interesting thing that they do though for you, every time Jesse kills somebody, when he comes back to Freemanville, every time he kills one of these white people, they show a little flashback of what a piece of shit that white person did. You know, mm-hmm. he shows that they were there and they were part of what happened to his dad. You know, when he shoots, the blacksmith guy, when he shoots him, it shows a flash of the blacksmith being a piece of shit. And then in the jail, right, with the jailer guy, when he shoots him, it shows him same thing. And with Bates, the same thing. I mean, like, he's not just like, you know, mowing people down Django style.
Yeah.
He's really, which, you know, no disrespect because that was badass. But still, you know, this is all like really purposeful without having to be like too heavy handed.
Yeah. And that's what I enjoyed about it. Cause I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't mind at all, you know, films that might be heavy handed, but when I watch a film like that, I go, oh, you're going to lose a good chunk of audience because it's so heavy handed, you know, just like any film though, not, you know, any film that's got a message that gets a bit preachy like that. I mean, even films like, I hope you don't mind me bringing it up, but you know, you get films like God's Not Dead, where you look at it going, I get what you're trying to say here, but you're doing it with a sledgehammer and you're not going to get through to the people you're trying to get through to. You know, when you get too in your face with whatever message you have, it tends to turn people away and they just turn off because they don't want to have that, you know, hanging right in front of them. And so you end up losing, trying to win possibly the audience over, you know, lose the point to the people who really could use the point.
Yeah. And you know, what's cool is that, you know, it's not like Mario Van Peebles is not the son of an activist and a revolutionary, because he totally is. And so he is not going to make an empty movie,
mm-mm.
but you will see it in the film. If you are paying attention, you will see it in stuff like that. I mean, Papa Joe yells out, no justice, no peace. That's not just some line, you know, that really has a lot of meaning to it. And the whole thing about having another black person, like, you know, one betray their, mm-hmm. their cause and their people the way that Carver does. I mean, that is not, you know what I mean? That's not just like any character could have done that or been that. You know, and like I said, like I would have liked to have seen Carver change his mind or whatever.
Right.
But by not changing his mind and by being an opportunist, and all that, there are things that, you know, if you wanted to write your paper on this movie, you could.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's what I love. I love films that do that and handle that well. And Posse definitely does that. And this is a fun movie. I had a blast. With this film, I'm so glad you brought it up, Andrew. Because, I was like, this is just a film that was not in my wheelhouse at the time, and it kind of faded out of my memory. And then when you brought it up, I'm like, oh yeah, I remember that film coming out, and I love Mario Van Peebles. So, you know, I sit down and watch it, and yeah, it's fun. It's fun. It's a straight, you know, it's a Western first for sure. And yeah, it gives you insight of the history, and this cast makes it worth it a watch alone. So
yeah, well, I mean, you know, as a fan of movies and, you know, as a film critic and all this other stuff, you're like constantly like looking at new things, you know. But when mm-hmm. we go back to old things or trying to group things together, or talking about Westerns or talking about action movies or talking about horror movies, and we're looking at like the history of the genre, there are places you can look and things you will find. You know, and that was why I was like, I saw the list of all the Westerns you guys were covering. And I was like, what about Posse? It's not that I thought you guys were purposely leaving Posse out, but I, you know, I could have said, what about Johnny Guitar also? You know, I'm not a Western fan. The ones I am a fan of are the ones that are a little unusual because I'm an unusual motherfucker and I like unusual movies. So that was why I thought, well, if Posse is not being talked about, let's check it out and see if it was, if it's still any good, you know? And I know that you like Westerns now. Right,
I do. I've really fallen more into Westerns over the years. After I got out of college and that, and now finding out my my oldest, I didn't get a chance to sit down and watch this with him because it was near his bedtime for school. But I may watch it again with him because I learned he's got a love for Westerns. So
yeah, I was going to ask you, man, because you guys watched both Magnificent Sevens together. I remember that was such a cool thing for you to do, by the way. Mm-hmm. And I liked that. Then he watched, did he watch Seven Samurai?
Yeah, he sat through all 3 hours of the Seven Samurai. In fact, we did Seven Samurai, ate supper, and then watched Magnificent Seven.
God, that's amazing. So like, well, okay. Well, you know, Mario Van Peebles not listening. I mean, where would you, where, how does his, as a Western, how does Posse stack up?
You know, I where it would stack up is I'm not sure it, you know, it's not quite on spaghetti Western level, but close. I think I enjoyed this film a bit more than I did Young Guns.
Yeah.
I think this is a more solid Western than Young Guns, because Young Guns, it's about a very popular cowboy, you know, outlaw, or, you know, the story that everybody knows already. And it's packed with a whole bunch of really well-known actors, you know, who were hot at the time. Whereas Posse, I think, has got a better story, and it's got the talent in here. And it's not a talent they're not in there to be headliners for the movie to pull audiences in. They're in here because these are people Mario Van Peebles said, I want to make a Western with.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell it, the difference. And so I'd say I put it above Young Guns, and I enjoy Young Guns, don't get me wrong. But this is a solid Western. I think this is definitely one that should be watched by people who enjoy Westerns and looking for something different in your Western, because this has all those elements in here, you know, a little darker storyline, the revenge story, it goes to some places, teaches you a little bit different angle or perspective, and I think it's up there as one of those Westerns, similar to, like, you know, I enjoyed Silverado, which came out in the same decade, because the Westerns were soon on their rise, so to speak. And the only reason I wouldn't equate it maybe with Unforgiven, because Unforgiven is a different story, it's a different movie altogether.
Sure.
Versus Posse, because Posse is an action Western. Unforgiven is a drama Western, and, you know, different things there. But yeah, overall, I'd say Posse is one of the better modern Westerns out there.
Cool. For sure. I'm glad. All right. So, you know, I was like, man, I'm going to suggest the movie to Mark that I haven't watched in a long ass time. Well, if he doesn't like it, oh, well.
No, I don't want to mark. Like you said, I dug it. I almost wish it was two movies. I mean, there's so much in here. You know, it's one of those where, oh, I love this guy. Oh, where'd he go? You know, it's
Posse the series. Yep. Get on it, Netflix.
Yeah, you could see it easily be a serial, the way it was handled. In the way the story's broken up, you could really do that. Explore some of the other characters in the Posse. You know, because I really wanted to know Father Time's story, because not only is it just a badass name, but just his character was great. I'm like, oh, this guy's badass.
Yeah, he just does some really interesting things and always drops some science. You know, always has something really, really cool to say, you know.
You know, so yeah, I recommend Posse. I definitely to Western fans out there, modern Westerns. You know, if some of them are done not so well, but this is one of the better done modern Westerns, I think.
Cool. But,
yeah. And glad you suggested it. So I think we'll wrap it up here for tonight for Posse. Hope we've got you interested in it, didn't spoil too much for you, and suggest that you go see it. It is rated R. There is a little bit of, risque elements in this, just to give you a heads up on that.
Oh, there's some booby, but it's so artful. You know, it's no worse than what was in Desperado, you know?
No, it's a romance scene. It's just a mature romance scene.
Oh, and there's some dude nudity, too. They all go skinny dipping together, man.
Oh, my God. I glad you brought that up.
The posse gets naked. Yeah.
the posse gets naked and a bunch of naked guys wrestling in such in a water hole. Yeah. Talk about a film that even today people would probably be watching and going, am I just watching it?
Yep. Just saw Debo's ass. That happened.
You see a lot of male ass in it. It's like, oh man.
Yeah, but you know, Diva was no, he didn't have no a double.
Well, no. Got to be him. No, that's true.
Yeah.
There was no double involved there. So. And on that note, I think we'll end it for the evening. Andrew, now this is a great time where you can tell folks where they can find you at, sir. Well, when you're not here talking movies.
Okay, well, if you go to Amazon Video, Amazon Prime, I got a bunch of movies you could watch that my friends and I made here in lovely scenic Athens, Georgia, where we are weird and make cheap, cool movies. Space Boobs in Space is the current release. We've also got Pajama Nightmare, Late Night Cable, The Underground Cinema with an S. Just search for Gonzorific, GONZORIFFIC. Every minute that you stream our movies helps us make more movies.
So help support indie cinema, folks.
I don't care if you even watch it. Just let it play all day in your house. Just let it play.
Just let it play in the background. Yeah. And every so often you'll look up and you'll see boobs. So there you go.
There's a little bit of cleavage there. It's as advertised. Just a little bit.
Well, I thank you, Andrew, for bringing up this film, and I'm glad we could get together to discuss this film tonight. I know you're a busy man, so I appreciate your time.
And hey, you're a busy man too, movie man.
I am. Real life kind of intervened for a while, but we'll be getting back on track for sure. And but I thank you, and I hope, audience, you got interested in this, and check out Posse. It's on rental on the Amazon for only a few bucks. Worth your time, especially if you're looking for a different modern Western. And I think this is where we're going to ride off into the sunset tonight, partner.
That's right, you rustlers. And remember, if you like Westerns and you don't like Posse, you're a racist.
Hey, all my Spoiler Room friends out there, if you like what you hear, why not head on over to iTunes and like, comment, and even subscribe to our channel? It always helps us out. Or you can find us on Stitcher Radio as well. You can drop us a tweet on the Twitter at Spoiler Room PDCS or Special Mark Pro. Look for us also on Facebook at the Spoiler Room Podcast or in the Special Mark Productions Facebook group. Let us know what movies or topics you'd like to be discussed in the Spoiler Room, where the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.